The verses that we've covered so far are Shukadeva Goswami's address to the question of Maharaj Parikshit, what to do, what's the subject matter for hearing and chanting and remembering and worshipping, and what not to do. And emphasis in the response is on the chanting of the holy name. And from that chanting of the holy name, the awakening, the message of Srimad Bhagavatam together, the awakening of devotional service done with an inquisitive spirit, very sincere inquisitive spirit to understand Atma Tattva or Atma Vit. So the section that's coming up is the largest portion of the chapter, and it's preliminary instruction in forming a spiritual conception when there isn't one. So it's for the instructions that we're going to hear as we're going through it. I'll probably say it a couple of times just as reminders, but it's not the highest instruction. It's a very preliminary instruction. So some persons like to not go to the position of surrender to the personality of Godhead, or at least initially they're not capable of going there. So mechanical means of controlling the mind and senses and where the mind is to be placed instead of upon sense gratification is to see things of the world in relation to the form of the Lord. So the Pirat Rupa conception is introduced. It's coming up. But initially, even to do that effectively, there's the application of the hearing and chanting process simultaneous with the reducing, eventually terminating the involvements in worldly pursuit, worldly endeavor, worldly consciousness. What's in this first chapter very much resembles the these parts of it resemble what Narada instructed Dhruva. In this section, chapter 1, there is information about the Ashtanga Yoga system. Now, we're not advised to perform the Ashtanga Yoga system. We're not capable of doing what Dhruva did either. It's not intended for this age. It's not intended for us. So when we're reading this portion of the Bhagavatam, or that portion or other portions where it describes, it should be held in context of the whole Bhagavatam's message. So there's the Ashtanga yoga system, pranayama system to assist in bringing the mind to a peaceful and under control state. There's specific instructions about reducing material involvement, withdrawing the senses from sense objects, detachment, strong message, and then so in this chapter it's the difference between what's in this chapter and Dhruva Maharaj Lila is where the mind is placed. Here it's place the mind upon some conception of God. Chapter 2 is upon not just some conception of God, but specifically upon Paramatma. And that is what Dhruva was recommended to do. Joined together with the pervasive theme of the whole Bhagavatam, which has been adequately and strongly introduced here, the hearing and chanting process. Because through the hearing and chanting process, that's where cleansing takes place. The other is control and restraint. Which is a good beginning, and it's not complete and fully effective. So the cleansing must take place. Where we ended last night was the Katvanga story was referred to by Shukadeva Goswami as an example of the value of a moment's full consciousness in comparison to a whole life of dull consciousness, a long life of sensual pleasure or whatever it is. Longevity in itself, it's evaluating what is, who is a fortunate person. And the fortunate person is one who can have this gift. They can fix their mind upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even for a moment, that person is more fortunate than one who has whatever other fortunes there are in this world. And so we're now going into text 14. And in text 14, Shukadeva Goswami instructs that in comparison to Katvanga Maharaj, you have 7 days. And best to use those 7 days very, very conscientiously. And the indirect instruction for the rest of us is we don't know at all. It may be same as Katvanga. It may be as long as Prikshit Maharaj, it may be longer. But there are certain things that need to happen, whether it's in a moment, and Katvanga was able to do that because of his practices during his life. Similarly, Maharaj Prikshit, although he had 7 days, 7 days isn't a whole lot of time, how to prepare ourselves. And that's take shelter of the sound representation of the Lord. During the duration of life, and by this method, liberation will be possible. So emphasis is, once again, on hearing and chanting, awakening the spirit of devotion, and following that, devotional service itself. Now here comes some of the components, and some of these components are mechanical. So it's not the highest level of instruction, but it's an introductory level of instruction. Bear that in mind. At the last stage of life, text 15, one should be bold enough not to be afraid of death. But one must cut off all attachment to the material body and everything pertaining to it and all desires thereof. So there's several parts to this. Face death fearlessly. What to speak of fearlessly, Dhruva, when he saw death personified approaching, it was, thank you very much for giving me a little footstep to get up onto the Vaikuntha Vimana. Very kind of you. It wasn't with fear, but those that, as we were discussing yesterday evening, those that don't know their destination, they don't know who they are, their whole situation is absolutely uncertain. It's a fearful situation. And how do you cope with a constant fearful situation? You just go in denial. So you can cope. You bluff. So you can cope. We've heard this expression before. Don't worry, everything's under control. I remember hearing that from some friends of mine. Kind of mystical group, and everything's under control. Oh, you bluffers. Everything's under control. Everything's under the control of the Supreme Lord, and we're detached from the Supreme Lord. Everything's in utter chaos. To teach us, and there's a purpose behind that, to teach us that that's not the position of natural happiness. So, Prabhupada explains in the purport that how can one be fearless at death might be compared to, are you afraid when you go to sleep at night? Because what death is, in one sense, is it's several months sleep. Just like when we go to sleep at night, we forget what our daytime activities are. And on the subtle plane, when we're dreaming some other, whatever it is, embodiment, some other perspective. And the seat of consciousness is there, but the lens through which we're seeing may be so variegated. And the daytime activities we forget. And then we wake up in the morning, oh, I am so and so. I travel so much, I first have to figure out, where am I? Oh, yeah. Sometimes I get the wrong something. Oh, yeah, I'm such and such place, and the door's over there, and the door's not over there, because I'm not in such and such place. Oh, let me figure this one out now. Okay. I know who I am, but where am I? So, when we wake up, then we remember Prabhupada's, oh yes, I have these duties to do, and one begins performing those duties because the sense of identity of self is restored. But when we're asleep, that sense of identity is forgotten. And rather we identify with whatever is in the dream. I'm a king sitting on the throne. Or here comes a tiger. And I'm afraid. Or whatever it is. I had a dream about 10 days ago. I was, believe it or not, I was in an airplane. I don't know how that got in my dream. And there was a little kid going up and down the aisle in the airplane. He looked real cute, looked at people, and then sneezed real, like, intensely. And I got a real spray of sneeze. And I woke up in the morning with this heavy cough. I don't know how it happened. Apparently, when things happen subtly, I don't know how it happened. One was the cause of the other. So anyways, we forget during our sleep, and likewise during death, we forget all these things that we're attached to. And while we're in, you know, while it's leaving our hand, it's very fearful, because if I don't have these things, I mean, it's attachments are very powerful. And if I don't have these attachments, what do I have? I can't let go of these things. It's one of the bungee cords. It's one of the things that holds us to the material situation is if I let go of these attachments, where will I be? Because if I don't have a positive identity of who I am, I give up these things and I'm zero. I have nothing and I am nothing. If I give up misconceptions of self, and if I give up the I and mind, the whole realm of false ego, it's what? Who am I? What am I? I can't do that. Some things I have to hold on to, especially those ones that are really, I'm really attached to. Then I'll just, you know, continuing putting my dhoti and kurta on, and I'll walk down the street being a devotee. Nobody will know the difference. But I'm maintaining attachments. And it's not at all uncommon to do that. So the advice of this verse is, let go of those attachments. But then what's coming up is, where do you place the mind instead? And things that you're fearful of, like letting go of attachments or fearful of death, because it represents all at once losing all those attachments and the instrument for enjoying this body. So as long as one is identifying in the I and mind in this false ego realm, spiritual progress isn't going to take place. There's a nice verse in Prahlad Maharaj's teachings where, someday we'll discuss this at length, but he explains that when one is in the bodily conception of life, that's the I conception is misplaced, it means that the mind conception will also be misplaced. And for such a person in that conception, misconception, they cannot be helped by any endeavor that they make. They cannot be helped by another person who is trying to assist them, nor a combination of the two. So letting go of material conception is essential. From just the previous purport, I'll read it again because it's well worth hearing it again. The effect of chanting the holy name of the Lord is perceived by the chanter as liberation from the conception of false egoism. Lord Kapila's teachings to Devahuti, he says something really amazing. He says that by any other process except bhakti, it is not possible to eliminate the material mind. It's possible to direct the material mind away from certain things towards other things. But the process of bhakti alone literally dissolves the material mind. Did you catch that? The process of bhakti dissolves the material mind. And it's not like an Alka-Seltzer tablet that just dissolves in the water. Or the water vapor that's in a cloud, when a wind comes, it scatters the water vapor and the cloud dissipates, but it's still water vapor in the air. It dissolves the material mind. It's gone. Because what's the material mind an instrument for? The material mind is an instrument for carrying conceptions, for desires, for thinking, feeling, and willing, for accepting and rejecting, sankalpa, vikalpa. These are all functions of the mind. And if your business with the material world is finished, thus ends the need for a material mind. It's awarded to the living entity as one of the subtle elements for living entities that desire separate enjoyment. And what a relief, huh? No more material mind. Not just, you know, struggling with it and battling with it, but it just stops. But in its place, the spiritual mind, that is, thoughts of the Supreme Personality and Godhead, are restored. The natural condition of the soul is restored through the process of bhakti alone. Very wonderful. And there's a spiritualizing process, and that's devotional service, headed by, just as this chanting of the holy name glorification is describing. So there's in this text 15, the underlying, what's mentioned before, hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam, because that's what he's now doing, is narrating Srimad Bhagavatam, and chanting the holy names of the Lord, and detachment from the body and conceptions of self in relation to the body and extensions of the body and all the desires thereof. Then Prabhupada waxes into one of his favorite subjects, that is bashing impersonalism, and he's just doing his service to his spiritual master. Desire is the concomitant factor of the soul. You heard that phrase before? Desire is the concomitant factor of the soul. Concomitant factor. It's like, is a property of the soul. It's a constitutional property of the soul. Wherever you have souls, you'll have desire. Wherever there's desire, there's a soul. Like wherever there's a sun, there's heat and light. Wherever there's fire, there's heat and light. Concomitant factor is desire. So, desireless means no separate desire from our natural desire in relation to the Supreme. And that's desireless state, to lobotomize desire as impersonalism would have it, is, well, it's false. It's something, it's anesthetizing, but even when there's anesthetizing, consciousness, like somebody that's under anesthesia, when the anesthesia wears off, then consciousness returns. Even in that anesthetized state, according to the Sanskrit terminology, even in that state, consciousness is there. It's just in a dormant state, like a seed is in a dormant state, or when the living entity is within the womb, it's in a dormant state of consciousness. It's in that susupti state, just like under anesthesia. Same term is used. But consciousness is there, just in a dormant state. And then there's the sleeping state and there's the awake state. In the sleeping state, the mind is active, but the physical body isn't. But the other senses, the rest of the senses, besides the mind, and to some degree hearing. So, the idea then is the chanting and hearing process change desires. Just when done in a proper with proper attentiveness and respect, then desires change. That's called purification. Another way to say what purification is desires move towards the position of goodness and away from the position of ignorance and passion, and ultimately to the completely spiritual position. The natural desire of the soul is restored in its healthy state through the hearing and chanting process. So it's subtle. It's not just managing problems. It's addressing the root of those problems. It's like so much of what allopathy is just managing the problem. The symptoms, and you just add something so the symptoms don't show. The problem is still there. Just cover the symptom. And Ayurveda goes to the root of the problem. And the Vedas go to the root of our material problem. Not just legislation that manages problems. And that's where life direction finds wisdom, is you go to the root of the problem. And I have an attitude towards Krishna. That's my problem. And therefore, I also have an attitude towards those who represent Krishna. And I have an attitude those who represent Krishna. And, you know, just I've got an attitude towards a whole lot of people and a whole lot of things, because I've got an attitude with Krishna problem. You fix that problem, you're no longer in material circumstance. But your life becomes Vaikuntha. And by your consciousness, other things start to transform. Not because you did it, but because the internal potency is operating instead of the external potency. That's how devotional service is a benediction for, whether it's a pure devotee, just moving about the surface of the earth. It's a benediction for the earth. Now, on this point of detachment from family life, because it is here, three, Prabhupada mentions, three of the four ashrams are without the development of family life. One of them is an arrangement, in one sense a concession, or a regulated way of involving oneself in family life. And then vanaprastha is, okay, bell's ringing, 50 years, time to let go of family life. One of our largest communities in all of ISKCON is in Alachua. Something like, I don't know, some large number of families, 350 families or something like that. So when I was visiting in Alachua, I was somehow given the opportunity to read the verse where Prabhupada was speaking about the necessity of vanaprastha ashram. And he said it in very strong language. You know, people are attached in all of that kind of language. And then those who are serious and sincere on the path of spiritual life must leave at the age of 50 their family life and enter vanaprastha life. And then Prabhupada gave one more bang on the nail with his hammer and said, this isn't optional. And so I looked around the room and I said, Śrīla Prabhupāda vācha. And I got a number of comments afterwards. But, you know, when you take the words that are coming in these purports as personal instructions, then, you know, it's not just a matter of information processing. This is something that a direction my life needs to move in. That's why this the culture of respect is so critical. It's not just, as we were discussing, Prabhupada was discussing, this is not like accumulation of material knowledge. It's knowledge, but it's spiritual knowledge that operates in a different rules, different principles. And when the relationship with the scriptures and those who are representing the scriptures is proper, then that absolute knowledge is right before us. The absolute truth is disclosed. It enters into our heart and it guides our lives. Otherwise, it's this thing that's out there that, you know, we process, that we're so familiar with, just the information processing realm of material life. And then it doesn't touch the heart. So, looking around the room, probably safe to say everyone here is not ready for vanaprastha and sannyas life. But we're not ready for death either. So, but it's something that we need to consider and prepare ourselves for, because it ain't optional. Here it is, an instruction. One must cut off all attachment to the material body and everything pertaining to it. Guess what that means? And all desires thereof. That's pretty intense. One should leave home and practice self-control. In a sacred place, he should bathe regularly and sit down in the lonely place, duly sanctified. So, here we're getting three of the five most potent activities in devotional service: chanting the holy name, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, now residing in a sacred place. And when one goes to a sacred place, it's not that now I'll continue my family life in a sacred place. Once Prabhupada, we were in Prabhupada's time, we had he started the system of having a Mayapur festival and then Vrindavan festival following that Mayapur festival. Prior to Gaur Purnima, and part of that whole package was the GBC meeting, which meant that the leading devotees in our movement all went to Mayapur, so that was like a big encouragement for devotees to go and get their association. And then Prabhupada had the insight, the understanding, to make it to have during the morning announcements of all times, the following announcement that when grihasthas come to a place of pilgrimage, it should be for these purposes, for the purposes of detachment and purification. Prabhupada requested to remind our householders, it's the wrong idea to think you come to the place of pilgrimage and it's an ideal place to conceive a child in the holy dham. It's not the purpose of going to a sacred place to increase those kinds of activities. It's the sanctification is decreasing those kinds of activities, decreasing the contemplation of expanding the field of material activity, rather decreasing the field of material activity and focusing the mind, engaging the senses in activities that will purify the senses and focusing the mind on the personality of Godhead. After sitting in the above manner, make the the mind remember the three transcendental letters, A-U-M, or pranava, and by regulating the breathing process, control the mind so as to not forget the transcendental seed. So, again, I'll mention that these are not the ultimate instruction that we receive from Srimad Bhagavatam is to awaken love of God. These are not in that. This is preliminary instruction. Thus, Prabhupada, he translated it. He didn't delete the verse from the Bhagavatam, but it's not our principal instruction. The purpose behind this is for those who are not so inclined in the spirit of devotion that they can at least be given a facility that their senses can be brought under control, their mind can be brought under control, and the gradual purification can begin. In the purport, Prabhupada gives a definition of what Omkara is. And it's one of those words that the bija syllables in Vedic mantras don't have a translation, a common English translation, if it's like Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om is just Om. It's an address to the Lord. So, but here Prabhupada has explained, O my Lord, quote unquote, just as Om Hari means, O my Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is pranava. In the Bhagavad Gita, the pranava, or omkara, has been accepted as the direct, literal representation of the Supreme Absolute Truth. But then, O my Lord, yes, Om, oh, yes. Oh, yeah. It does lead to something else, is the point. It's an address. It's a sound representation. It's of the same spiritual quality as the Lord himself. And so it's particularly attractive for those who the pranava unto itself is for those who are not ready to surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead directly. But it awakens that the spiritualization of the soul. It's the preliminary step. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Gradually, as the mind becomes progressively spiritualized, withdraw it from sense activities, and by intelligence the senses will be controlled. The mind is too absorbed in material activities. The mind too absorbed in material activities can be engaged in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and become fixed in full transcendental consciousness. So, the mind must be withdrawn from sense activities. The principle here is that in order to make progress on the spiritual path, in order to progress in anything in life, you have to give up something and accept another something. So when I was a small boy, I had a tricycle, and I would ride my tricycle, and, you know, like a little kid, you play, some kids, whatever it is. At a certain point, there's, you're supposing you just stayed fixated on, just have to have a big tricycle. So to move along a maturing path in life, it's just what we experience all the time. You let go of something, and you accept another something. This is a function of the mind. Vikalpa and sankalpa. Rejecting and accepting. So, those who are sincere on a path of spiritual life have to be prepared to let go of some things and accept another set of some things. And when you've identified what the goal is, or when by descending mercy the goal has been identified for you, and then the means to reach that goal have similarly been identified, then this step that's being identified in this verse is the lesser activities in the phase of life where one has developed attachments. Those attachments, you need to let go of them and become attached to other things. That's where this desire is the concomitant factor of the soul. And there are different places where desire takes shelter in the mind, it takes shelter in the senses, takes shelter in the intelligence. So these instruments, they're material instruments, all of them, senses, mind, intelligence, they all need purification. And when Krishna sees, here's the, like the operative principle, the jugular vein of the whole thing, is when Krishna sees the sincerity of the individual, the sincerity of the individual to move on the spiritual path, then Krishna gives spiritual intelligence. Dadami buddhi yogam tam, tesham satata yuktanam, bhajatam priti purvakam, tadami buddhi yogam tam. And what is that buddhi, that intelligence that Krishna gives? How to reach him. Inamam upiyanti te. So how to leave behind this entangling situation, and both, and how to reach the spiritual situation. So then it's in the Sanskrit of the verses, buddhi sarati. So we know what partha sarati is. That's Krishna. He's the sarati of Partha. He's the chariot driver of Arjuna's chariot in the Battle of Kurukshetra. Partha sarati. Here's buddhi sarati. Krishna becomes the chariot driver of one's intelligence, and the intelligence then becomes the driver of the chariot of life. Krishna gives that intelligence as the driver. So the senses, compared to the horses, are directed by the driver. And the good old mind, our dear friend, our best buddy, the mind, becomes then the instrument for controlling the senses under the direction of intelligence. When things are in proper order, the intelligence that Krishna supplies addresses the mind. My dear mind, please, let's go over there. And the mind doesn't whine. Whoa, I don't want to go over there because... Let's go over there. And sometimes the mind doesn't even ask. The mind just goes over there. Anyway, so... This is where discipline comes in. This is the meaning, Prabhupada says, of disciple. There's no meaning of disciple without discipline. That's a pretty simple phrase, huh? It's like, desire is the concomitant factor of the soul. And little sutras. There's no meaning of disciple without discipline. So, if one inquires and some instruction is given, and then it's, you know, this, well, let me think if I like this instruction. That's the mind. Our dear friend. And so Krishna supplies in a variety of ways. Krishna supplies from within the heart. Krishna supplies as Chaitanya Guru. He supplies intelligence, how to come to him, and externally also through scriptures and those who represent him. Krishna supplies intelligence. And if one, when he supplies that when there is some sincerity, but then it's a test of the degree of sincerity, the preparedness to follow that instruction. Not just, you know, grit your teeth and say, okay, I'll do it. That's better than saying no. That's not really what following instructions are. Following instructions are, as Prabhupada has taught us, where it becomes your life and soul. And one who takes such instructions, the instructions of Scripture, as applied in our lives from the spiritual master, this is why we require a spiritual master. It's the means of realizing Krishna's nature, Krishna's loving position. That's Krishna's arrangement. Are you sure you want me? Here's an instruction that you may not like. Are you ready for that? So there are things here that there is not some specific instruction. It's a principle of detachment, and the mind may rebel from that. I don't know, but maybe 40%. But you know, the end point of life is 100%. And the explanation that's given is, if the mind doesn't become progressively spiritualized, as the verse is saying, then the system is that whatever the mind is attached to, that condition of mind will carry the soul to the next material position. So this is instruction, how to not be carried to another material position, but how to reach the kingdom of God. So it's just one of those things that we want the kingdom of God without God. We want the kingdom of God, but we don't, that's that relationship of full surrender to God. Not sure I want that. And that's the material condition of life. We want the kingdom of God without God. So, spiritualization is therefore gradual. And it's a series of letting some things go and accepting other things. Accepting Krishna's arrangements for our purification. And that which guides that whole effort, that's buddhi sarati. It's the intelligence that Krishna supplies. And our best intelligence is to recognize the limitation of our intelligence. And to recognize we need superior intelligence. That's our intelligence. And then Krishna supplies that superior intelligence. We're ready for that. In the form of this descending mercy and instructions that we receive. And the deterrent is false ego. It's the beast is identified. It's very hard to get a 500-pound gorilla off your back. Mind. Driven by false ego. So, this Omkara, the chanting of pranava, and the pranayama system is the mechanical, it's the preliminary approach. That's what's being spoken of specifically here. It's to awaken one's spiritual disposition so that one can go the next step into the realm of devotional service. And we're being given instructions by our founder Acharya to go straight to chanting Hare Krishna and trying to serve Krishna. But so these things that need to happen in the indirect process, they need to happen in the direct process too. Thereafter, you should meditate on the limbs of Vishnu, one after another, without being deviated from the conception of the complete body. And this limbs of Vishnu is one message that one can take from this is literally the form of Vishnu. But then the Virat Rupa is what's going to be coming up. This imaginary form of Vishnu, a Vishnu made of the material creation, which is also a form of the Lord. Thus the mind becomes free from all sense objects, meaning when you see the things within nature in relation to the body of the Lord, it's not an object for enjoyment. It's you see the Lord. And here's another feature of the Lord, another feature of the Lord. And that dispels, the purpose of this is to dispel the disposition of approaching things for sense gratification. In addition to knowledge, to say to the person, that's a no-no, what do you put in its place? You see that thing in a different way as manifestations of the form of the Lord. Goes more deeply, more and subtly. There should be no other thing to be thought upon, because the question in the first canto, 19th chapter, was, what are those things to hear about, to remember, to meditate upon, and to worship? So he's answering the question. And what are the things not to do? So nothing else. That's what not to do. And here's what to do. Because the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu is the ultimate truth, the mind, our dear friend, becomes completely reconciled in Him only. So, it's just pointing to the object of meditation. People sometimes ask, in your process, is there a process of meditation? That's a joke. It's a whole process of meditation. It is a process of meditation. No, but you know what I mean. Yeah, I do know what you mean. This is a process of meditation. And that leads to this. Oh, could you explain that? Sure, it's being explained. There's preliminary mechanical things. The purpose of that is to like, it's like telling a child that's disruptive in a classroom, go sit in a corner, look at, just put your chair looking at the corner, just look at the corner. Oh, Sunday school teachers, parents of children, is that going to work? No. But it's a preliminary something. Just go make your mind blank. Fix your mind on a candle flame. But it's not, doesn't reconcile, it doesn't purify, it doesn't satisfy the mind or the heart. So the process of meditation is hearing these wonderful messages of the personality of Godhead. Yeah. This is the last verse in this section. In the purport, Prabhupada comments, one should not, however, forget or be misled from the complete form of the Lord. Thus one should practice thinking of the different parts of his transcendental body one after another. Once again, bashing the impersonalists. Here in this verse, it is definitely assured that the Supreme Lord is not impersonal. He is a person, in case you didn't hear it the first time. But his body is different from those of conditioned persons like us. Otherwise, meditation beginning from the pranava up to the limbs of the personal body of Vishnu would not have been recommended by Shukadeva Goswami. So it's one of Dhruva's statements when he's offering praises to the Supreme Lord, his prayers. He describes, I've experienced all types of forms, trees and birds and animals and aquatics and humans and demigods. Dhruva has experienced demigods. But this form that's standing before me is not amongst any one of them. This form standing before me, beyond speculation. It's not like, that's a nice idea. But by direct experience, this form is Satyat Ananda Vigraha. Unlike any other form. And so, we're not Dhruva standing before Lord Vishnu, but we're students of Shukadeva Goswami, and we should understand from his explanation, he's not going to recommend meditating on something imaginary. Excuse me. He goes through the Virat Rupa to help individuals fix some personal conception, but when he speaks of the limbs of Vishnu, there are transcendental forms, each of the parts of the body of the Supreme Lord, as is his name, and as the instructions themselves also. Okay, so end here and see if there's some discussion.
About Bhakti Tirtha's passing and how his devotees, his disciples were inquiring about his...
How to carry on in his absence.
Right. And so I guess with today's discussion, I'm coming to find myself realizing or questioning, well, how do I say... the spiritual master, then, does he also take that platform of material, of being part of that material?
Part of that material? What do you mean, being part of that material?
Just to say that we reach that certain point where we renounce all material things around us and surrounding us. And I mean, is that we take the spiritual master with us? We keep the spiritual.
I don't know what the question is that you're asking.
I'm sorry. The words.
The concept is not coming through either. Are you wondering, is the relationship with the spiritual master eternal? Is that what you're asking? The answer is yes.
I realize that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, although Bhakti Tirtha Swami is not physically present, or although Srila Prabhupada is not physically present, he's spiritually present. While he was physically present, one could also ignore him. While he's spiritually present, one can also ignore him. But that doesn't mean because you ignored him, he's not there. Does that help? So, you know, the physical you don't take with you, but the spiritual you do. Does that address your question? Anything else?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
We basically put it this, you are discussing about how we are trying to give a spiritual conception to people who have none.
Yeah.
It started with the meditation on Om, and later on it goes to the Virata Purusha. These are the kind of people who do not have an appreciation for the form of the Lord. But Shukadeva Goswami is recommending at this stage itself to meditate on the limbs of Vishnu. How?
Well, it's like, it's not necessarily all set in chronological sequence. Because he hasn't even begun with the Virat Rupi yet. I'm knowing that that's coming. I'm preparing all of you. It's coming. So far, he hasn't mentioned Virat Rupa at all. I have. He's speaking of the limbs of the Lord. Limbs of Vishnu that are fully spiritual. Virat Rupa is an imaginary form. So, it's not chronological. Does that address your question?
But I'm still confused.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
But, so, I mean, if this is for a person who cannot meditate on the form of the Lord, if the process of chanting, just meditating on form, then why are we giving him, okay, meditate on the limbs of Vishnu, directly go on to Vishnu then? Why do you need form?
I thought I addressed it several times. And the simple, I'll try it one more time. The simple answer is, some persons are not prepared to surrender to the personality of Godhead. In fact, that's why we come to this material world, is dvesha and raga towards the position of the personality of Godhead. If we didn't have that problem, we wouldn't be here. We've got the problem. And so some persons are ready to directly address the problem. Some persons aren't. So rather than say, okay, you're not, go to hell. That's not the message of the Bhagavatam or the Vedas. It provides, okay, you're not ready for that, here's this. Okay, you're not ready for that, here's another thing. You're not ready for that, here's another thing. So now you're asking, why not the whole thing? Some persons aren't ready. The Vedas are, another way of saying the same thing is, that the Vedas are compared to a desire tree, kalpataru. And from that kalpataru, one gets everything. So it's not everyone's desire is, I want to restore my loving relationship with the personality of Godhead. I have another desire. Shukadeva Goswami is preparing the audience that's not just Maharaj Prikshit, but those who are all the praja in his kingdom, because he's asked on their behalf how they can prepare themselves. So you're giving multiple options. And he is indicating this is the preferred one. Okay? His voice got a lot higher. Really, Madhusudan? We'll do him and then you, okay?
When Katmanga Maharaj was just hankering for one moment of consciousness.
No, he wasn't hankering for one moment of consciousness. You've got the story.
Valuing.
He just wanted to know when is that moment? He could have asked for anything material. He didn't want something material. He wanted to know how much time do I have before so I can prepare myself. That's what he wanted. So the statement by Shukadeva Goswami is about better that he only had one moment to live. Better that one moment than a long lifetime of ignorance. Is that? No, just frame your question properly and go ahead.
So,
Katanga Maharaj wanted to know when he would leave his body. How much preparation time did he have?
So, we are now saying that even a moment of consciousness is very valuable than the whole life of dull consciousness. In that sense, because now we are on a progressive path of spiritual path, progressive spiritual path. Slowly taking out the material attachments and
hopefully, yeah,
and accepting the instructions and hopefully. Progressing slowly.
Yeah,
so it appears that when one is fully convinced that this is what I want, that my relationship with Krishna, it seems that's the ultimate state that one fully is convinced, and at that moment, can we say that he is really Krishna conscious?
That's right. Well done. You probably heard me say this, but it's appropriate. Swamiji, how long does it take to become Krishna conscious? Swamiji says, less than a moment. Long pause. And in this less than a moment, two things, sense gratification and mental speculation, need to be discarded. Pause. Generally, people are attached to those things, and therefore we say the process is gradual. Okay?
My question is also related. Within your trying for gradual progression, do you think also that it also requires full stop or making that decision? Because when I say gradual and it gives one inch to the mind, it takes a whole lot. How to stay on the gradual progressive path instead of
well, be faithful and be realistic, both. To stay is to be faithful. And realistic is gradual. How do you go back in time? And how did you begin? And that's how you remain. And the gradual is realistic.
How do you know if I'm being realistic or giving into the mind tonight?
Just follow instruction. Then you don't have to worry about the mind. Gradual. That's the instruction. So just can take continual steps that are moving in the right direction. There's the light in the darkness. All around me is darkness. And the darkness is fearful. But there's the light. I see it. I have faith that if I continue walking towards the light, I'll reach the light. And keep making steps. That's gradual. The mind may say, oh, it's so dark here. Just keep moving to the light. This is Bodhisarthi. That then the intelligence gives direction to the senses and the mind. My dear senses, don't go over there. Go over there. My dear mind, not over there. Over here. There's the light. Okay. Faithful. Then it's progressive. And realistic is, I'm not Hanuman. I can't just one leap and I'm there.
So the
good thought, very perceptive. Therefore, the resolution is a willingness. That's where the sincerity, the eligibility is in sincerity. Rupa Goswami's teaching. I'm stuck. Help! And then someone offers some help. Just keep calling help. That's when someone can't help you. I may be conditioned by material conceptions, but I'm willing to move. I sincerely want to move from this position. So I'll just repeat something that you've heard, you know, at least a half a dozen times. The value that a spiritual relationship has, that is, spiritual master and disciple relationship specifically, is not how far along the spiritual trajectory an individual has moved. The value is that from whatever the position is, there's a sincere desire to move. To go forward, to make that spiritual connection. So it's not, oh, this person is not very advanced, so you know, I just neglect that individual. That's not an understanding, a proper understanding at all of the intrinsic value of each individual. Is their sincere desire to move on the spiritual path, and recognizing the means to do so is descending mercy, let me take shelter of that descending mercy. And back to Jairadhe's question, it's not here's a spider and here's Hanuman, so the Hanuman's good and the spider is not good. That's not. Each person can do their capacity, and if they're striving according to their capacity, the Supreme Lord accepts. And that's the means of, or it's the position from which one can make advancement. And each individual should be encouraged for the service that they're, sincere service that they're offering. And what it represents is the opportunity to leave behind that I and mind conception and accept the spiritual conception. And it feels altogether different, even in the preliminary stages, than acting through false ego. Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.